What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin, and we have a tough podcast, in a sense, to introduce. And it's about the fact that teen suicide in the United States is up by 70%. Not one of the trends that we like to report on, but I think it's very important. And you might say, well, what can you say about this topic? Well, there are a lot of different insights, and you and I need to understand when we see a young person in trouble, well, what do we do? What are our responsibilities? How can we detect that somebody might be in a situation where they would consider this terrible, terrible outcome for themselves, and they feel that life is so difficult that they would rather not have to continue in the way that they are. So this is a tough one. It really is. And it's more of a conversation. And I hope that it does get across some important information for you. I talked to child care expert Florence Ann Romano about the growing rates of depression and suicide among kids and teens. And again, the numbers are pretty staggering when you think about it. The suicide rate for white children and teens between 10 and 17 was, again, up 70% from just 2006 to 2016, which is the latest data we have available to us through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And although black children and teens kill themselves less often than white youth do, the rate of increase was actually higher among that population, 77%. So a really important and really devastating topic when you think about it, a life cut short. And many of these lives so promising, so much to live for. Well, why did they choose this alternative? We'll talk about it today on America Trends. With us on the line on America Trends is Florence Ann Romano, otherwise known as the Windy City Nanny. And tell us, we're talking today, of course, about teen suicide, which seems to be soaring in this country. And we've seen the biggest rate increase among black youth. And we know a lot of people think this is a white middle class issue. It's affecting all of our young people. Florence, as you look at this, give us your background and why this issue is so important to you.
I was a nanny for 15 years and have seen a lot of things in the 15 years of being a nanny. And after I retired from being a nanny, I still wanted to stay connected to children. And that's when I wrote my children's book, Nanny and Me, to help children and parents understand the transition of being cared for by your parents than being cared for by a nanny or a caretaker. And it's been a wonderful platform to be able to connect with parents and caretakers and nannies and children, to be able to talk about child care in the new millennium and the trends that are going on, and not even just the trends, what is our culture in child care today? And when I saw this article come out about the statistic regarding suicide in children today and teenagers today, it was profound, and it of course hurts your heart, but it begs the question, what's really going on there? What are these influences in society today that are making that statistic so robust and so dreadful? So through my work as a nanny, I've seen the good and bad and the ugly, but I've also seen kind of how times and life and raising our children has changed. And I do think there are some factors out there that are contributing to articles like this being written.
Well, there are a lot of people who might imagine that social media is at play here. So we need to talk about that. But what are some of these other factors that you're most concerned about and have been drawn into as a result of your work with young people?
Social media is definitely a large factor, but I also think that we are getting away from some of the old school values that a lot of us were raised with. And because of that kind of fading away and dissipating, it's changed the way we are in relationship to our children. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's one thing if you're going to be the disciplinarian and raise your kids and, you know, they're going to have manners and they're going to respect adults. And I agree with all that. I think we need to bring more of that back. But what I think we're losing sight of now is making sure that that relationship with our child, yes, is not a friend, but it is a safe place and it is a transparent place. And it's a place where children feel they can go and communicate their fears and their joys and everything in between. I feel that children don't have as many places to turn today, and the places that they are turning are not necessarily the most productive for them or even mentally healthy for them. But it starts at home. That's really where, you know, my platform is that we need to make sure that we're being proactive parents, we're being proactive child care providers and nannies, where we are synced up with the children and what's happening in their lives, keeping a finger on the pulse of what's happening in their world specifically. Who are their friends? What are their outside influences there? You know, I don't think people put enough of an emphasis on the fact that, you know, you are the company you keep. And that's something children learn very early on. And if you're not involved in what your child is involved in, you know, extracurricularly or with their friends or, you know, who the parents are of their friends, even that. I think you're setting yourself up for a lot of issues.
When I read about this topic, I see so many things. I mean, we are, on the surface, paying a lot more attention to mental health and concerns. And yet, at the same time, we may not be going deep into that. We say that we are, but there are many false starts and there are many deficiencies in the way we deliver mental health services. The other aspect to this that you talk about, the parenting, is the fact that a lot of the problem, at least from what I'm reading, is that we've got a lot of parents who themselves have issues that are really affecting the kids. They have opioid addiction. They're not as attentive to them. So there's a lot going on today. And then, of course, as you talk about the forces of social media and the unsafe spaces that many kids feel at school today, where they're being bullied with social media and directly. So it just seems kids are really at a very tender point with so many places where the system and their own parents can let them down.
I think there are different, depending on your generation, there are different obstacles that you have. But the social media aspects of our world today, you know, the addiction to technology and the influencers that we see out there, and I really mean it when I say influencers. You know, that's what they call them. You know, that's the urban dictionary term of it today. But they really are influencing our youth. You know, they're looking at this, you know, reality TV and these people that become famous for nothing, and, you know, people on Instagram who are parading and touting this very perfect life and existence and this, you know, perfect, perfect bodies, perfect makeup, everything. And, you know, you think about young women, young ladies, little girls that are influenced by what they see, and they look up to these people as role models. And a lot of these people, sorry to tell you, should not be role models for our children. But we have now glorified that in our world today. So how do you combat that when you have so much technology and influence coming in these different capacities? It's very hard to monitor that. So it's, again, it's begging a larger question of how do we monitor the technology? How do we limit it? You know, what are the values of our home, the rules of our home? So, you know, there are a lot of outside influences. Like you mentioned, you know, a lot of these children who are falling into this statistic have a lot against them, whether it's their family member that has a drug problem or, you know, there's neglect or abuse going on. It's still the idea that we have to get down to the common denominator, which is, are we actually raising our children? How are we raising them? What are we exposing them to? And being very cognizant of that. And it starts at home. I'll always go back to that.
Oh, absolutely. And look, I can understand a lot of kids being depressed. because they're looking up to an iconic model or this utopian view of what's out there, and certain people on social media saying that they're screaming out loud, my life is so great and it's better than yours and so on and so forth, or some of these icons that we put in front of our kids. So I can understand a lot of depression, but I want to go, Florence, from depression to actually deciding that it's not worth living, and that suicide is really the only way out. Because what we're really talking about here is that teen suicide is rising, and I'm really trying to figure out what's going on where kids will make that ultimate decision. And there are some who say that maybe it's what they call suicide chic, or contagion suicide, where, you know, it happens in various communities. There are certain ways that we can track what's going on to be more attentive to kids because of what's been going on in and around their own lives. Do you think we're really attentive? Do we really hear what kids are telling us, or do we just never believe it could happen in our own life or our own community?
I think it's a hybrid of both. I do think that there has been suicide, and this might not be the best way to describe it, but it's been glorified in certain ways. You know, you've seen the suicide packs. You've seen, you know, different Facebook or otherwise groups that are out there on the internet for, you know, young teens to join, and they kind of encourage one another to take their lives. And we've seen it in the news, you know, most recently where that girl was charged for assisting suicide with her friend. And so I think we're seeing a trend here with suicide, and it's terrible to even use that as a phrase, but it's true. And I think it comes down to something, though, that is the tale as old as time, is that children growing up, there are so many challenges. It's so hard being a kid, and you always think there's no way out, and it's never going to get better. Mm. We've all been there before, you know, and that's the common denominator here. No child ever thinks it's going to get better, that they're going to live in that unhappiness forever. And that's why I love seeing the campaigns that are coming out about saying, you know, it gets better and, you know, just get through it. But again, it goes back to how do we support our children through these bad times? You know, not minimizing their feelings and not just medicating them right away, you know, actually getting to the root of what's going on. Again, what's happening in school? You know, you have to be involved in your children's lives. Who are their friends, the influences, like I said before? So, you know, in looking at this statistic and actually breaking it down and not, and because there are many different categories for it. But my biggest concern over seeing this trend in suicide is that we are starting to show children that there is a way out and that death is the way out, and that is a acceptable choice. I mean, we're not even just seeing it with children. Look at the celebrities that have come out in the news that have taken their lives. And, you know, that begs the question of mental illness again. But again, they're seeing this. Children absorb all of this, and you can't devalue that. You can't minimize the fact that they're exposed to these influences.
Oh, absolutely. And folks, what we're talking about here is that the suicide rate for white children and teens between 10 and 17 was up 70% between 2006 and 2016. And this comes from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And although black children and teens kill themselves less often than white youth, the rate of increase was higher, actually, in blacks, 77%. And let's remind ourselves, and you work with a lot of young people, I mean, their brains are not totally formed, and maybe even their mechanism for responding to bad things happening in their life, or seeing a situation because of their parents or their community or how their friends and peers are dealing with them, they feel they're out of control. They may not have the other mechanisms to deal with their concerns. And so they think suicide is the only way.
You make a good point is, you know, what are the tools that we're giving our children to learn how to cope? How are we building their self-esteem? You know, what are we exposing them to, pardon me, that's positive? You know, things that bring them joy, things that bring them purpose. I know when I went to high school, I loved my high school. And I it was just a very special place. It was very inclusive. I'm not saying that bullying didn't go on or people felt out of place, but it was a place where you felt you could be who you were, be what you wanted to be, and you'd be supported. And I wish every child had that experience in their life. And I know that's not the case, but it is about getting to know the child and knowing what their personality is like, and being able to kind of shuttle them, you know, and guide them to different things that are going to give them purpose, like I said, and make them feel important and valued, that their place in this world, even if they feel small like we all do, that they're contributing something in some way. There really is something to be said for value and the self-worth that you have and the identity you associate with. I know it seems like a sophisticated concept, but children actually are exploring this when they're younger, and it's something we as adults can understand because our emotional intelligence, or hopefully our emotional intelligence, is elevated to that point. But what we don't realize is that children are trying to find that identity too, especially, you know, the young teens and teenagers, and then they go on from there. But it's about finding out who you are and feeling supported through that. And so I think that that's a conversation that needs to happen in homes and between friends, and it should be this emotional intelligence part of our brains should be exposed when we're younger, and we should have the adults helping children speak that language earlier.
And Florence, having worked with as many children as you have, do you think that parents or schools really look at these signs of depression to encourage counseling, provide information, and do we have enough information out there? Do we have enough support, suicide hotlines, various text lines? Yeah. Do we have enough of that? When we see the rise that we do, are we responding as a society in the ways that we should?
I'm seeing more and more of it. You know, online, you know, there are so many different places where you can text and talk to a counselor, and I think this is great that we're innovating in that way. What the school districts are doing, I think it's always going to depend on that school district and, you know, what money they're putting toward it and the type of people they have working in that school. But I do think we need to put more of an emphasis on training our counselors that are working with children to be more limber regarding kind of how they are approaching counseling those children. But the other thing I want to mention is, again, another tale as old as time, and no matter the generation, is the idea of shame. You know, this idea of feeling bad, that you are suffering through something. You're suffering through a depression. You don't know why you feel this way. You can't get yourself out of it. And, you know, you're not old enough, to be able to make sense of it. And so there is that shame and that embarrassment that comes with depression.
And there's even a greater stigma in the African-American community surrounding a lot of these mental health issues.
Yeah.
But we've tried to put a lot of this out in the open, and yet you think we're still at a point where physical health and mental health, there's a great distinction that is made, and therefore a lot of the things that may be obvious to us, we try to push off those signs. I was reading where cutting, for example, a lot of young people are cutting. And you say, what a terrible thing to self-inflict, and yet we might pass that off. But that is a key indicator. Or if somebody has tried even a really primitive attempt at doing self-harm other than cutting, and we might ignore that, but that is a telling sign, too, that they may continue again and try it again until they're successful.
The ways that children are coping with whatever is traumatizing them, whatever demon is in their, you know, kind of tugging at them, there's a myriad of ways we're seeing people deal with that. I mean, look at us as adults, you know, how we deal with a bad day, or how we deal with, you know, just not equating it with a bad day, but just dealing with our emotions in general. What's our outlet? You know, how are we dealing with that? Well, I think that's part of the issue for children, is we're not necessarily giving them options for outlets. And some children, it's sports. You know, some children, it's, you know, doing musical theater, whatever it might be. But again, my point is being able to expose our children to those options and find out what works for them. And it's never going to be a perfect world. You know, we're always going to deal with this being a part of it. You know, mental health is going to be a part of it. Suicide, it's going to be a part of it, because that's our world. It's not fair. It's not perfect. But, you know, what are we doing to help support it and eradicate it as much as we can? That's what we need to be concentrating on. And I also think that we need to put more of an emphasis on just being kinder and tolerant in this world. And if we're leading with purer hearts and a less judgmental eye and, you know, and accepting more in this world than trying to hurt or cut down or bully, then we're going to see a lot of this stuff correct. But leading with that as the way you are going to lead your life and the way you're going to raise your children, that's what I challenge.
I agree with you, Florence, but when I see the national dialogue politically, and everybody getting cut down and everything
right.
being so personal, I don't like what I see in that regard at all. You know, it's really
right.
interesting in reading up on this issue of which kids are the highest risk for suicide. If they did try previously, that's definitely an indicator that you've got to watch the child. And I know there was a friend of a friend of ours, and they did everything they could to monitor what was going on with that child, but he had attempted suicide and he ultimately succeeded. And they were obviously and still are devastated by that. There's also the family history. I mean, it is shown that suicide by one family member increases the risk of suicide among others within the family. And also not to overlook some of the local epidemics. If you're reading about others who are actually committing suicide, don't think that that doesn't have an impact on your own child.
I couldn't agree with you more. I also would like to extrapolate upon that a little bit more, in that when you're looking at, you know, whether suicide is something that has been repeated in the family, you know, through generations or, you know, even just one, you know, previous generation, whatever it might be, it begs the question again of what's happening with mental health and what are the genetics playing into it. And if that's the case in your family, and, you know, I've had experience with it with, you know, different family and friends, you know, who have this kind of genetic predisposition to having certain mental health problems, how are they addressing that then with their children? You know, they feel shame about it as adults, but if you don't feel comfortable talking to your children about what could, you know, genetically be a part of them, and it's something maybe they can't control without medication, but you have to try to find a way to have that conversation with the child so they don't feel alone. They know they can turn to someone for help. And, you know, if you're going to disguise that and mask it and never talk about it in your family, you're not going to do your children any favors in the long run, because they need to know where it's stemming from. They need to be able to look out for certain things. So, you know, again, going back to this idea of having transparent conversations about truthful things, things that matter, and things that if you don't address are going to snowball, and then all of a sudden you're wondering why you're in the situation you're in, and maybe it could have been avoided if you could have just from the beginning been talking about it in a way that was accessible and safe for
a
child.
And apparently, when you look at it, I mean, there's so many signs, depression, use of alcohol, a whole range of things, and that's why easy access to guns, which is the mode that most of these kids are using, is not a good thing, and a lot of states are trying to lock up these weapons in their own homes so that at least they don't have access to it. But it was really interesting the other day, Mayor Pete Buttigieg, the guy who's running for president, and he is openly gay and is married, and he said, if you gave me a pill that could have made me straight when I was younger, I would have taken that pill and any others after that. In other words, it was to him so difficult to be gay in our society. And you read that many adolescents who take their own lives are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, or questioning their gender identity. And he was saying, again, that had he the opportunity, now he didn't say he would have killed himself, but he showed a certain desperation about the situation, wishing to be anything other than that.
Well, because, again, the common denominator in something we've seen years and years, decades and decades, is the worst thing in the world a child can ever feel is different. You know, and that's, I think, what he's getting after, is that he wanted just to fit in. At that time in his life, he just wanted to fit in. and not stand out for the wrong reasons. Now, we're living in a different type of society today where things are changing and the way we make families are different. And it's a beautiful thing that we're all becoming more open-minded. But it doesn't change the fact that when you are different or something is making you stand out, that attention, sometimes for you, the individual who's dealing with it, it might not be the most positive thing. Maybe you don't want to stand out. All you want to do is fit in. All you want to do is fly under the radar. So, you know, as much as we can celebrate these differences, it still doesn't change the fact that if you stand out and you feel you're standing out for the wrong reasons, that's going to make you react in certain ways. And that, again, leads right to the statistic of suicide, because they never think it's going to get better, that they think that this is going to be the only way people look at them, this is the only existence they'll ever have in their life. And it's so hard to look at a child and say, take my advice. I've been there. I've seen it. I've done it all. It's going to get better. It's not going to be like this. Well, you know what? It doesn't matter to that child, because they're the ones that have to get up every day and go to school and deal with whatever they're dealing with. You know, it's hard to get them to see the bigger picture. So again, you know, how do we fix it? You know, there's many different ways, many different strategies down to, you know, a kinder, gentler, more tolerant world, and also making sure we're supporting our children, whether it's in school or in extracurricular activities or just right at home around that dinner table.
Or getting them the counseling and added support that they need. And Florence, I'll give you an example in my mind of the most graphic and horrifying form of suicide that we see. And it's based on what you just said about not fitting in. And if you go and you look at where all of these mass shootings go on in schools, it's in these suburban or less urban communities where everybody needs to fit in, everybody needs to be the same. And if you're a failed joiner or someone isolated and you feel different and you lash out at others, and then ultimately what you're trying to do is commit suicide. And many of them do at the end of that horrific process. But in the wake of that, they're taking the lives of so many other wonderful, beautiful children.
It's so hard to even wrap your mind around the fact that we live in a world where this is something we have to talk about and what exists today. And to think that it won't ever happen to you, like you mentioned before, is naive, you know, to think that it would never touch you in some sort of respect. And that's why, you know, we as a community, we as a culture need to be paying attention to it and making sure that our healthcare system and our school systems and, you know, the system in place at home, you know, is up to snuff and is able to deal with these very real and very scary, you know, subject matter that unfortunately is a part now of adolescence. And all you can do is try to make sure that your child is as loved and supported and feels as safe as they possibly can. But it doesn't mean that it's going to be perfect, and it doesn't mean there aren't going to be problems, that real issues that you're going to have to deal with. You could be doing the best job that you possibly can, but sometimes, you know, it's a mental health issue and you have to be able to address that.
So, and if someone tells you that they are thinking about suicide, Florence, I think you would agree with me that there is a preventable element to all of this. So if you're hearing any statements about suicide, take them seriously. 50-60% of all people who died by suicide gave some warning of their intentions to a friend or a family member. So we've got to listen to each other, as you said earlier, be more respectful, be gentler, and listen. And again, if they are one of those individuals, and I'll let you put a punctuation mark on all this before we leave today, Florence, if in fact they're somebody at higher risk for suicide because of family history, mental health issues, previous attempts, what's going on in their community, pay special heed to that. Correct?
Could not agree more. And I will always say, you know, you have these children so that you can raise them, so they can live their life, you know, so they can make a difference. They can enjoy their lives. They can do what brings them joy. But it's a responsibility. And regardless if it's you, the parent, if you're a single parent, you have a spouse, you have a partner, or you have a whole army of people helping you, because I'm all about letting the love in and putting an emphasis on the village. whatever the case is, whatever your family dynamic, it starts at home, and you need to be involved. And I will always be a big advocate of that. You need to be involved in your children's lives. You need to raise them, guide them, pay attention to them, and not make them feel like they're less than anything else in your life, that they are a priority. And if you can have that open dialogue, that open communication, and you are a safe place to land for them, then you are going to be set up for more success in your family. But it starts at home.
Florence Ann Romano, the Windy City Nanny. And it was good. I mean, two of us who care about children, who have been looking at this issue, we're not the professionals per se, but a very good conversation today about this scourge in our society of teen suicide and its increases. Thank you so much for being a part of America Trends today on this really difficult subject.
Thank you for having me.
America Trends podcast is part of the MHNR Network, MHNRnetwork.com.